Welcome to GhostBiz here on the Business Report. I'm Gary Struwwel. Every week I get to talk to the finance ghost about what's going on the South African markets as well as locally and, of course, internationally. Ghost, welcome back to the show. Literally the elephant in the room. Of course, that's the symbol of the Republicans back in power. Trump back for another term. How do you think, and this is all speculation, of course, how do you think this affects the South African markets?
Hi, Gary, and to all the listeners. Gee, straight to the big questions here. Yeah, look, I'm not super surprised with the outcome of the US election. I must be honest. I think it was kind of going that way. And I think once you add in the distribution power of someone like Elon Musk on X, who was such a strong Trump supporter, you add in the likes of Joe Rogan, etc., and you get to this kind of outcome. And I think maybe lessons have been learned here by politicians around just how strong the world of social media has actually become versus the sort of mainstream media outlets. As I guess, user of X in that way and my own platform, I suppose in a way that pleases me. But moving on from the politics into what it means a lot. It means that America is going to be very focused on, sorry for the cliche, but making America great again. So you're going to see policies that are extremely pro-US economic growth and probably not much care in the world for what that means elsewhere. So net-net for South Africa, it's probably not a great outcome. It's going to lead to a stronger dollar. It's happening already. So we can be very thankful for the GNU and what that's meant, obviously, for strength in the region, of which Namibia is a good recipient as well. So thank goodness. I fear that if we had had a bad election outcome in South Africa, heaven only knows where the rand would be right now. I think the other thing to keep an eye on is going to be China, obviously, and lots of tariffs, potentially a bit of a trade war there. What could that mean for the Chinese economy? But also, what does this mean for BRICS and the extended BRICS? And maybe there is a positive to come from this, is that the so-called Global South will need to band together and try and work with each other as best they can, because they're not going to get any help from the Donald, that is for sure. So, maybe over time, better trading among the BRICS, I'm not sure. But short term, I think not great for certainly Chinese stocks, etc. Potential tariff wars there, as I've mentioned. And then all the kind of knock-on impacts. If Trump's presidency hurts China's economic growth story, then we're kind of back to square one for a lot of the luxury brands, a lot of the consumer brands who have experienced such great growth in China. The other thing I would look out for, what's going to really be interesting actually, is India. And India, maybe not in people's focus, in terms of how it all works with tariffs. It's a bit different to China. They're not necessarily manufacturing much in the way of goods. It's more like a services economy. India has actually been the emerging markets darling of the past few years that has largely been ignored by people. And that's going to be an interesting one to watch, because if there's a big correction in India and it becomes the baby thrown out with the bathwater here among emerging markets, that is an ETF that I would probably buy, because I think the Indian economy is very interesting.
All right, so let's shift our attention now to some information that's come out of South African markets. Murray and Roberts, a big construction firm and often seen as an indicative stock as to the health of the economy, typically when spending is happening full steam, cement and concrete and construction, all a big part of it. Murray and Roberts have put out a dreadful trading statement. At least 20% down is, of course, the minimum that that gets triggered when they have to make these sorts of announcements. And it's also related a little bit to De Beers. Perhaps just give us a sense of what's going on there.
Yeah, Murray and Roberts is nosediving at pace. I'm afraid it's down another 9.5% at the time of us doing this chat. So yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. And construction is a tough way to make money. It really is a difficult way. It requires all kinds of investment, obviously, from your customers, ultimately. And when one of your customers is De Beers, who are desperately trying to figure out this new world of lab-grown diamonds, this is something I've been writing about a lot. And a lot of people have disagreed with me and said, no, it's nonsense. And, it's not a real diamond, etc. Lab-grown diamonds are real diamonds. They are just made in a different way, and they cost far less than a mined diamond. And you're kind of starting to see this realization dawn on more and more people, and it is really hurting the De Beers business. They keep talking, when Anglo American releases results, they keep blaming macroeconomics this and macroeconomics that. I think it's much simpler than that. I just think they're losing market share at pace to lab-grown diamonds. And unfortunately, for a company like Murray and Roberts, who depends on companies like De Beers to be out there, investing in their mining projects, it really, really impacts their business. And Murray and Roberts has problems elsewhere as well. There's a slow ramp up versus what they expected in the US and Mexico. You know, they haven't really made any traction yet in Indonesia after they've tried to kind of revive their Australian domiciled operation. So they've used that classic at least 20% drop wording, which is massive danger zone for investors. I think it's going to be substantially worse than that if you read between the lines on how important De Beers is as a client for Murray and Roberts. And on top of all of that, they still have debt they need to sort out. They are still trying to raise more capital, fix their balance sheet. Very hard to do on a normal day, even harder to do when things are this tough.
Different kind of global market now, and that is the gold market. Sibanye-Stillwater closed over 10% higher as they put out some good news for a change. They really have been a torrent of terrible news over the last few years. Tell us what's going on with gold.
It's funny to go from diamonds to gold, isn't it? I was reflecting on that when I actually sent out that ghost mail where it's like bad news in diamonds and then good news in gold. And yeah, look, Sibanye, it is a broken story. So the reality is that anything that looks remotely positive, the market is just going to jump onto. And the positivity is only in gold. I mean, PGMs are still down year on year if you go and read their numbers. But gold has done much, much better, which is because of the gold price, you know. And it's not really like we can pat management on the back and say, you know, well done, guys. This is your own amazing deal making, your own genius coming through. You know, it's just a great gold price. And it's obviously helping to just offset some of the ongoing struggles in PGMs and just a lot of the bad luck that Sibanye has also suffered. And they really have had more than their fair share of bad luck. I guess all I can say is thank goodness that they resolved their gold labor issues so that they can actually take advantage of these gold prices. Because if Sibanye had gold labor issues now, yeah, honestly, I don't know where that ends. It's really the only part of their business right now that is on a positive trajectory.
And lastly, guys, let's just look at the property sector with the number of rates reporting mid-years and finals. There's a lot of information coming out around these various property companies. What is what you're seeing on the markets tell us about the health of that particular sector at the moment?
So coming into this year, I did think that the property sector was going to be the place to be. And thankfully, that has proven to be correct. I positioned myself accordingly in my tax-free savings account and elsewhere. And yeah, so far, so good. It has done well. And it's not anything clever. It's just looking at the macroeconomic cycle and saying, well, when interest rates went up so sharply, it was really bad for property because their debt becomes more expensive. The values of their properties go down because the rates we are using to go and value those properties effectively go up. And so the present value of the cash flows comes down and hence these properties are worth less. The debt costs more. And on top of all of that, you have a scenario where all of their tenants are also now paying more money to banks and therefore are going to negotiate more strongly on the rent, etc. So it's just a bad time for property when interest rates are high. So conversely, it therefore is logical that as interest rates start to come down, the property sector will rally. And the property sector is not, you know, people are not going to wait for the first cut and then say, oh, wait, hang on, what about property? You know, it starts to move in anticipation of a cycle, but that doesn't mean you can't make great returns. And I think what we are starting to see come through is for most of the funds, they are definitely starting to have a better time. You can see it in things like positive rental reversions, which means the old lease, or rather the new lease, is now concluded at a rate that is higher than the old lease. You know, in the pandemic, that was not the case. We were in negative reversions territory. We've got a scenario where funding costs are now starting to effectively plateau and will start to hopefully come down now as well. We've also got a scenario where a lot of the retail-focused REITs, which are my personal favorite when they're invested in shopping centers at the moment, you know, they get that flywheel effect of interest rates coming down, people spending more. They have turnover-based leases. They have a lot more demand then for the space because their tenants feel they can do better. So that remains my favorite of the property asset classes is the sort of typical shopping center type REIT, especially the convenience centers and the ones that are kind of fringe rural areas and lower income areas. There's a lot of growth in that space, definitely. And I remain happily long property. I do think that, you know, the best of the rally has largely happened, but there's still plenty to be made. You know, there's dividends to come through. There's underlying growth in the net asset value per share of these funds. Not a bad place to play, in my opinion. Still one of my favorite sectors right now in South Africa. And nothing I've seen has changed my mind on that yet.
Thank you, Ghost. Let's leave it there. That's it for this week's edition of Ghost Biz. But we'll be back next week. And remember, you can at any time go and subscribe to the excellent newsletters put out by the Finance Ghost. You can go to ghostmail.co.za. Number of different newsletters there that you can stay up to date with what's happening on the market. So, of course, you can just catch this podcast wherever you find your podcasts. You can go and listen to this and previous editions of Ghost Biz as well. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.